If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
What's the best way to reduce? Eat plenty or starve yourself?
30 pounds in just 18 weeks, Jenny Craig totally worked.
I love to eat, but overeating made it impossible to lose weight.
My body wants bread, and I'm going to give my body what it wants.
Oh, my God.
So I lost
naturally.
Medical studies prove that overeating is the number one reason for weight gain. If you need to lose weight, you
really
switch that
through
and bring your weight down.
Losing weight
can be more difficult.
It's
more
emotional.
Losing weight can be more
emotional.
Welcome to Fat Camp, a podcast that throws a comedy eye over our societal obsession of diets. Now, a little disclaimer, we are not health experts, but we are fad diet connoisseurs. I'm your host, comedian Grace Mulvey.
And I'm your co-host, Connor Dowling.
Welcome to Fad Camp. Hello, Connor.
Hey, Grace.
I think we have some exciting news, don't we?
Absolutely.
This is like sort of a children's TV show. It's very annoying for the adults. Like, what important news do we have today? So we are recording for the first time in the same room, which we've never done before on Fad Camp. But more exciting is we're actually recording in the Headstuff studio. So we are now part of the Headstuff Podcast Network. All very exciting. We can't believe it. We're in now, instead of like being in our own sad apartments that we don't own and pay extortionate rent in, recording this, we're now in a proper soundproofed room. Can you believe it?
This is amazing. I can't get over it. We're talking to real microphones before. I don't know what we were doing, but maybe the episode...
Before we just had tin cans. A rope between us, yeah. And then we just recorded that. Yeah.
Whoever heard our podcast before, it's a miracle. But we're really excited to be here. Maybe the episode sounds a little bit different,
yeah.
But hopefully we're able to deliver the goods just as good. And if it's worse, let's just blame the studio.
Yeah, we'll blame the studio. There's some sort of weird voodoo around here if it's worse.
That must be it.
But I feel like the show just is going to sound sexier or something. Like, you know, it's next going to be less hollow and the sadness
about.
Of millennials' apartments involved in the show will no longer be a factor. It's going to be like a sexier quality to it. So yeah, Connor, the episode we have for today, I've prepared it. It's my one that I am presenting to you.
Very excited.
It's one that I got the idea for this episode off TikTok of all places. Listen, the young kids know what's happening with the diet world. But I had never heard of this diet before. I just had to delve into it, okay? So it is basically a religious-based diet, okay? Now, it was set up by Gwen Shamblin Lara. We'll go into her later, okay? It's called
Shamblin?
Shamblin.
I come from a long line of Shamblins, actually. No, I've never heard that name before. That's wonderful. That's great.
Wonderful. She is the founder of a Christian diet program called The Way Down Workshop and the founder of the Remnant Fellowship Church. Okay. So she founded a church based off a diet.
Wow. I haven't heard of any of those churches.
I know. I can't believe I've done nearly every diet going. I can't believe I didn't somehow fall into this like sort of weird cult diet. But anyway, we're going to go into it in a second. But what do you know, Connor, about religious based diets?
Wow. I mean, okay. I think, you know, we are going to be very well equipped to talk about religion in a very sensitive way. So I just want to throw that out there first.
On top of that, we'll discuss the sectarian issues in Northern Ireland.
Absolutely.
In a very, you know, knowledgeable way.
Okay, so what do I know about religious-based diets? I have to say, Grace, I have never really heard of like a diet per se that has a religion based around it. I know that, you know, in various cultures, there's fasting can be important.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, there's stories in the past of like, you know, during famine times, people being swayed into religions because they've no food. So I guess, you know, there's some sort of connection there. But to actually use a religion as like, it just conjures up all sorts of images. And the first thing I thought of was just like, you know, communion wafer and wine diet. Just like,
oh my God, that'd be an amazing diet.
Yeah, just all you need is that tasty wafer. You can get gluten-free wafers, as we know, in the church.
Yeah.
They do offer a gluten-free option. And you can do the wine. So you do wafer, wine.
I feel like a wafer wine diet is the diet of most like mothers in their 30s who are just dealing with young kids.
The wafer wine diet has a nice ring to it.
Doesn't it? Actually, what I found from doing the research for this is so much of the diet industry today kind of comes from religion in some way. Like, wow. Like if you think about, like, say, intermittent fasting and, like, cutting out certain food groups,
yeah.
A lot of religions actually practice those things. So first of all, right.
Do you want to know though, Grace, when you said that, when you said a lot of diets come from religions, I was like, really? And then immediately I was like, oh, absolutely, actually. You know, you've got some sort of charismatic leader at the head of, you know, there's rules, there's commandments, there's sins sometimes, you know.
And no, there's good and bad. Yeah. In every religion, there is good and bad. That's the same with dieting. Wow. There's always a person that you look up to. They're the one that you want to be. So, like, the head of a religion is the one that, like, is the kind of, like, peak of perfection of that religion. It's the same with dieting. It's like someone being like, do you want my abs? And someone else being like, do you want my soul? It's a good-looking soul.
And we've seen,
I mean?
Jesus on the cross. We've seen those abs.
He is svelte. Now, Christianity, generally, Christians, no dietary restrictions. I was brought up as a Catholic. The only rule I can remember as a Catholic food-wise was no meat on Fridays.
Okay.
That was a big one back in the day. That was like a mortal sin back
when
my...
Did you follow that in your family?
No. But like, I remember my dad saying, like, in 1970s Ireland, like, you know, peak depression, him saying like, oh, you couldn't, like, you wouldn't be able to eat any meat on a Friday. Like, as in, like, butchers would close and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm pretty sure you weren't allowed to eat before Mass. On a Sunday.
Yes.
And he always knew who was Protestant because you could smell their fries.
Right. And who was really dedicated because they would faint in church. People fainting in church.
Yeah, I'm sure they would.
From being starving. That was a real thing.
Like, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm probably.
And you'd be dying for the wafer. You'd be standing in the back of the church going, hook me up with that wafer, son.
I'm sure you could smell the wafer when the priest takes it out. You know, when he holds up the big wafer and he like cuts it up.
Why does he get a big wafer and everyone else gets a small wafer?
That big wafer as well. It's like, I used to think they were Milky Bar buttons.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so disappointed when my confirmation came and I could finally get that bloody. And then it was like, it tastes like paper.
But we don't get the big one. You're not on your confirmation, you didn't get the big wafer though, did you?
No.
Because if you did, we're going to need to have some serious words.
Imagine that he gave me the big wafer on a plate with like a knife and fork. And I'm like, thank you.
You want the wafer? You're going to finish that whole thing, young lady.
Yeah. Oh, you're not allowed to get into heaven until you finish every bit on that plate. So that was kind of the general rule. During Lent, obviously some Christians stop eating certain foods.
Yes.
That's a big one. But once again, no kind of set, steady rules for Christians. Now, Islam. For Muslims, they eat halal, which is like lawful foods. This includes fruit, vegetables and eggs. Any meat and meat products they consume must be from a halal slaughtered animal. Mm-hmm. Milk and dairy foods are halal and cheese is halal, depending on the ingredients. But some prohibited foods, also known as haram, apologies if I'm mispronouncing this, include pork, crustaceans, mm-hmm. blood, non-halal animal-derived additives such as gelatin and sweet, and alcohol and any foods containing alcohol. So fasting is also required during Ramadan, which is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar. Muslims must refrain from consuming food, liquids and medication between sunrise and sunset. Although obviously if it's like breastfeeding women, pregnant women or menstruating women are allowed to eat, children under 12 are as well, or chronically ill people. But that's, you know, fasting is a big part of Ramadan. Then Hinduism, right? Hinduism, like, is a very diverse religion with no central authority, but they believe that all living things have a soul. And so they're reluctant to kill any living creature. The majority of Hindus are lacto-vegetarian, avoiding meat and eggs, although some may eat lamb, chicken or fish. Beef is always avoided because the cow is considered a holy animal, but dairy products are eaten. And then Judaism. So Judaism requires food that's kosher, meaning food must meet the standards of kashrut, which is the Jewish laws about food. However, according to the Torah, Jewish law, the only types of meat that are acceptable are cattle and game that have cloven hooves and chew cud, right?
Okay.
So sheep, cattle and goats may be eaten as they meet the requirement, whereas pigs cannot be eaten. Because although they have cloven hooves, they do not chew cud.
Wow, that's such an interesting distinction.
Isn't it? I really was like, well, they really got away with those pigs, fair play to them. After slaughter, forbidden blood, veins and certain fats must be removed.
Lovely.
So it is really, then there's like, I looked into sort of some smaller religions, right? You have Mormonism, which they have a very interesting one because they have specific religious dietary restrictions, Mormons, that are, they don't drink coffee or tea, alcohol or smoke tobacco or any use any illegal drugs. The idea for Mormons is to avoid mind-altering substances. So they consider tea and coffee that.
Okay.
However, Mormons are also advised to eat respectively and with appreciation through portion control, zero waste, and by avoiding overindulgence. So basically the whole Mormons want to show off like self-control and humility through a monthly fast, equating missing two meals on the first Sunday of each month. So these are like, the reason I brought up this up was because when I heard of like a religious-based diet, I was like, what is this church doing?
Sure.
But then when I read about kind of the dietary restrictions around religions, I was like, when I heard clean eating came from like kind of Rastafarianism, I was like, what? It blew my mind because I think we think these things just show up out of nowhere.
Sure.
But they're obviously picked up from certain cultures or religions or backgrounds and then kind of repackaged and made into sort of, you know, and then probably also monetized.
Well, repackaged and made into commercial products, essentially.
Yeah, like instead of like, you know, this, maybe this will help you get closer to God, it's more like get these abs. That's what I think that they've repackaged it as. So going through all that, right? So this Gwen Shamblin Lara woman came up with her own church, the Remnant Fellowship Church. Now, unlike most diets that we kind of cover and how they've been created, a lot of the people that are creating them, we're like, their credentials aren't great nutrition wise and stuff like that. But Lara actually, or Gwen, I'm going to call her, earned an undergraduate degree in dietetics from the University of Tennessee and then her master's in food and nutrition in Memphis State University, right? So she was a registered dietitian, consultant and a faculty member of the Memphis State University for 5 years. She also worked in the US as the US State Health Department, like for 5 years as well. So this woman had
credentials
at the wazoo. Okay. By the way, this is just a little fact about her that I find very interesting. In 2018, she married Joe Lara, who was an American actor, martial artist, and musician, widely known as in the role of Tarzan in the American TV series Tarzan the Epic Adventures. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Oh, I think, well, was that the Tarzan that was on TV when we were like growing up?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she married a stud.
Wow. Well, I mean, if anyone knows anything about like clean eating and being crazy rich.
Yeah, 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 exactly. It's him. Basically, how Gwen became to be very well known and very successful, she was the author of The Way Down Diet, which was first published in 1997. Okay, this diet advises using spirituality to avoid overeating and has sold more than 1.2 million copies.
Wow.
I can't, like, that's what I mean. I couldn't believe how I'd never heard about this before.
Okay, when you say spirituality, though, like, that's a very broad term. What are we talking here, spirituality-wise?
I'll go through more details, a very specific type of Christianity.
I suppose, I suppose the reason I ask is because, you know, when people say, like, oh, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual, as in they, you know, maybe practice in meditation or believe in energy or whatever. But this is like, no, the spirituality as in the Holy Spirit, as in Christianity.
She is using direct quotes from the Bible.
Oh, I love it.
In talking people out of eating. Okay, when I go through exactly the quotes, the way, do you know, like, I always find that the way people are able to use a book or certain quotes to kind of for their own gain.
Oh, well, the Bible is like the number one place for that.
Number one. But it's like she got like a 10-step program out of the Bible of how to diet. Yeah. And I just, I'm like, I don't know, maybe like Jesus would be okay with like a Snickers every once in a while. I don't know. I don't know him.
Yeah. But also, I mean, the food pyramid was very different in Jesus's day. Like, we're talking a few loaves, a few fishes, basically just carbs and protein.
It was just half.
Yeah.
And it was just, the carbs was just bread, 5,000 bread.
Yeah.
And then the upper half was just 5,000 fish. That's it. That's your food.
That's all there is. Yeah. And just avoid the bread and you'll be fine.
So in the book, right, Lara expounds on her theory that there are two very different needs in each person, a need for food and an emotional need. According to her, people should only eat when they feel real physical hunger and stop when full.
Okay.
Not bad advice.
Right on.
Prayer and Bible reading will fill the emotional needs instead of food.
Okay.
Overeating is equated with greed. That's a core principle of... I can hear you go from... A core principle of the weigh down diet when people feel an urge to snack but are not feeling psychological hunger is that, you know, to avoid greed, basically. Lara encourages participants to read the Bible instead of snacking. Okay. So one of the big things of the diet when I was researching it is that she would use the term eat like a thin person.
Mm-hmm.
So Lara very much, or like Gwen, I'll call her, very much believes that there is no genetic reason for people being fat.
Okay.
She just doesn't believe that at all.
God does not make fat people.
No. Then babies are coming out wrong because all babies are fat. I'm just going to put that
good point.
All babies are pudgy. Gwen's highly popular ministry turned business, what she called the Way Down Workshop, wasn't always received so well, as you can imagine. This is her talking on the news Channel 5. I'm going to quote her. I got them on simple principles. Don't focus on it. Focus on God. Focus on his will, right? Her books brought her thousands of devoted followers, but also a lot of controversy. So the whole part of her saying, not believing, say that like there's any genetics involved, was she used the Holocaust.
Oh, no.
As a example of why she doesn't believe genetics have any reason to it. She claimed that she found support for her ideas, especially her belief that genetics do not play a role in weight loss, by looking at the starvation of Jewish people in Nazi concentration camps. She said, how in the Holocaust did you have these people getting so real down skinny? They ate less food, she told CNN's Larry King.
Oh my God. I'm just trying to imagine what his response could have been to that. Like,
I think it was just dead air for 5 minutes. Just, what do you say to that?
That is so crazy.
Why did she pick that? There's a lot of famines out there that you can use as a. It's a very weird thing that she went with that for that specific example,
so
as well.
She's saying that even in that situation, people still lost weight. Like,
because that's what she's saying. She's like, if genetics play a part, then why do these people lose? But I'm like,
so she's saying that they would have stayed fat if they were just genetically fat.
No, that's what she meant. Yeah.
If they were.
Yeah, if people were.
There's a lot to unpack there.
There's a lot going on here. So just to give you some information on Lara. On May 29th, 2021, Lara died alongside six other church leaders, including her husband, Joe, on a private jet bound for Palm Beach, Florida, which crashed into a Percy Priest Lake in Tennessee shortly after takeoff. So obviously, listen, we won't be we're not discussing that. We're discussing the business behind it. But that happened this year, which just, it happens to be a caveat of like such it's so recent that happened.
Wow.
Let's go to the diet. So that's about Gwen and the person that she was. She came into hot water as well because she sort of said, I don't get anything out of this, but it was a business that she earned a lot of money from.
Okay.
So people did kind of go like, well, it's not like this is for free. You know what I mean?
Right,
like either. So I went on the website and it is still extremely active. It's, kind of like any diet website. You know what I mean? There's a lot of like information on it. It's just like selling you a program essentially. But when I was on the website, which I thought was funny, it had the same promises that like all diet like programs do. No more dieting, you know, 6 weeks to a whole new life. Now the 6 weeks to a whole new life, why is it always 6 weeks? I don't know if this is every single diet, but every single time I'm always like 6 weeks is what you get in this, in any diet program.
Because a month's too short and a year's too long.
6 weeks is that golden period where you get to lose weight.
It's like, it must be like a marketing thing. Like, you know, the way they say, like, if something costs €20, make it €19.99, make people feel like they're getting a deal. Six weeks. It's like a month, you know, you can't lose weight, that much weight in a month, but in 6 weeks.
And I think as well, actually, there is a lot of things where apparently a lot of people give up on diets because they're unsustainable, obviously. But 5-6 weeks in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very suspicious.
I know. So it also, the third promise they made on the front page of the website was lose your weight permanently. Okay.
Permanently. Okay.
on the website,
you'll lose that weight permanently. You're going to gain back some new weight. You're going to gain back some new weight that you didn't have before. It's different weight. It's different fat.
Also, maybe the same even, even a bit more.
Yeah. And that's going to be new too.
Yeah. But the other weight, that's gone for good.
Permanently.
Because I then on the website, after they said lose weight permanently, on the website in the kind of getting started section, the first thing they have is, are you new to Weigh Down? And underneath that, or are you returning to Weigh Down? And I was like, well, if you lose weight permanently, why would you need to return to Weigh Down is my argument. Yeah. Wow. But anyway, so the first, like the three kind of caveats that they have or the three kind of promises that they say is relearn how to feed the stomach only when it is truly hungry. Relearn how to feed or nourish the longing human soul with a relationship with God. And third, relearn how to recognize the different hunger urges and not confuse them.
Well, you know, it's like a lot of things and like a lot of religious groups and like a lot of, well, what they call fringe religious orders, a.k.a. cults. There's a bit of, you know, truth in there, you know, like there's a bit of there's something attractive in there that when you hear the first line of relearn how to kind of like feed yourself or recognize your hunger and fullness cues. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's straight out of a mindful eating / intuitive eating.
That's literally the intuitive eating mantra. It's like, listen to your body and what it wants.
Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, you know, those sort of things. So like they're taking things that, you know, technically do work. And like you say, they're repackaging them and kind of pairing them with this and also relearn to nourish your religious outlook or whatever.
Yeah. The thing about it is, right, I'm not coming out to the religious thing. I actually, when I looked into the actual diet of it, again, it is a diet. Right. And when I go through kind of the food diary part of it, some of it is going...
Is it just generic?
It's not even generic. It's some of it is going also disregard your hunger. As in like, you know what I mean? It's almost pushing it to the point where it's like, you know what I mean? Like push your body to the point where you are like kind of starving.
Well, didn't it say at one point, when you're hungry, read the Bible? Didn't it say, or did I just imagine that? Was that God whispering that in my ear or was that you?
That was actually a light shone into the room. No, that was actually, basically it's like, if you don't think it's physical hunger, read a Bible is what they're saying. But let me go on. Okay. So in the website, once again, some of the stuff is all right that they're saying, but then it's also like then when you get in, it's like always, I think, it's like, on the website, you might get the good stuff, but then behind the paywall is suddenly...
Right.
Oh, yeah, an apple only every 2 weeks. Okay. And that's all, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the main website, it said, you are not a failure. It is not genetic and God is not sabotaging you. He does hope that your slavery to diets and overweight will make you call out to him. You're using your power and man's rules. God is too smart to let the local weight loss group or fat gram counting to be your savior and get all the credit.
So God is jealous of slim style. What's it called?
Slimming world.
Slimming world.
Slim style.
Slim style.
Was actually definitely, I think slim style would be a great weird dieting, like sort of like clothing line. Slim style.
Yeah, but the initials are SS. So it's just like, it's never going to work. God, so she literally is saying...
Sorry, I just got the fact that like Nazi concentration camps were brought up earlier and then an SS...
it's no coincidence,
Grace. It's no coincidence.
Yeah. So she is actually saying that you think God is going to let Slimming World, etc. take all the credit for him getting you lean? It's like, what?
Yeah, I know. But that's what I mean. I'm like, I don't know. This is where I'm like, some of the stuff I was like, that's okay. And now I'm like, oh, now this is getting very deep.
But sorry, but this is saying that not only does God care if you are overweight, if you are fat, God cares how much weight you are losing on your diet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And, wow. And God cares, you know, which weight loss group you're doing it with.
Okay, but you know what? I don't want to be insensitive. Like, real talk for a second, because let's say you are super religious. Like, I think it's probably no secret. Myself and Grace are probably not that religious. We've never had this conversation
before. I'm on the atheist diet.
I mean, I've just come from mass. But no, but like, if you are super religious, right? Fair play to you. That's grand. Maybe in your prayers, you are going to include something like, oh, like, you know, please God, help me lose some weight, that sort of thing. So, okay, no disrespect there, okay? But to actually like emphatically say in your program that God is you know, not wanting the weighing scales or the local slimming groups, the tools that you might use to help yourself lose weight, that God is not going to let that happen because he wants to take the credit for it. It's bonkers. Like.
Well, I also think it's bonkers when I'm like, the reason why I have no problem making fun of this, and I totally respect religious people, is that this woman is going to be making money off of this. It is not, like, to me, I'm like, I'm laughing at the fact that she's going, God wouldn't want you going there. He'd want you spending your money here. What?
I know. Oh my
like,
God.
That is a big statement to make. From, I think it that's really disrespectful.
It is.
Okay. So just go through more, okay? So I thought this was interesting. She has like a kind of, you know, a section in the website where it's like, you know, ask me kind of any questions. So how did this program come about? Well, Weigh Down was officially founded in 1986. This is now a 30-year-old faith-based weight loss program, re-established the idea of turning to God for help, an age-old concept that was abandoned in the 60s, 70s and 80s.
Wow.
I was like, what happened during those 3 decades?
Well, that's when the diet industry sprang up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Do you think the devil is in charge of the diet industry? Wait, actually, that would actually line up with a lot of what we preach here.
In a way, maybe we're being the fools.
Yeah.
What if the devil's behind, like, Weight Watchers and Slimming World?
I would
World
not be surprised.
And, oh, yeah. He's like, push avocados. Okay. She also mentioned, and this I thought was very interesting. She goes, I was personally battling being overweight through my teen and college years, even though the process of obtaining an undergraduate degree in dietetics and a master's. But after 6 years of study surrounded by the top minds in the country, I was discovering that permanent weight loss was evasive to all. So I turned from the many failed attempts at dieting and the study of food and instead began to study people who were thin from birth to adulthood.
Okay.
And I compared my behavior to theirs. The fact was they ate significantly less over a 3-day period and they had no mental or emotional preoccupation with food.
Okay.
I think a lot of thin people might have a preoccupation with food, but they only ate when they were hungry and ate in moderation, stopping after a small amount. I immediately stopped dieting, instead worked on changing my greedy for food behavior, imitating their self-control, and I lost my weight permanently.
Okay, but where does Jesus come into that? That's like, okay, so you observed thin people and you go, okay, this is the behavioral patterns, or what I think are the behavioral patterns of people who are quote unquote naturally thin.
Yeah.
Where do you go, oh, and also they're really good Christians?
Yes. Actually, that's so interesting. I wonder if she did a breakdown also of the religion of these
people. I talked
to
my one thin friend who is also big into religion. And this is what they had to say. Is this your research?
That might just be it. Like, yeah, I do wonder actually. That's so true because she hasn't mentioned how in any way
it's just
like,
tacked
her
on.
Faith has, done anything. This is what I mean though. That's why I think it's a marketing
She's
tool,
going you know? After the religious market.
Yeah, exactly.
And we know that we see this on American TV all the time. These kind of shop at home kind of people. I don't know their names.
Evangelists. Yeah.
They're selling snake oil. Yeah, they're selling, you know, send us donations and we'll send you healing, all that sort of stuff. So we know that this portion of society, this cohort, we know that they spend money.
Yeah.
You know, and if we're told if it's connected to something that they're passionate about, like religion. So it's like this. It's almost like this kind of 1-2 punch of like people are going to spend money on the diet industry.
Yes.
People are going to spend money on their religious beliefs.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can kind of hit the two of them together.
And that's what that's why I think, like, for me,
it's
I'm like,
genius.
You how
where do I sign up?
Pray away the garish overeating. We here at Bible Battle Binge Eating Program want to bring our faith back into your diet. With our easy 10-step program, you too can banish those unholy pounds away. Our steps are as follows. I am the diet that will lord over you. Thou shalt not have any delicious foods while following me. Thou shalt not take any pleasure in food. Remember to keep holy leg day. Honor thy food diary and thy fitness regime. Thou shalt not kill your diet. Thou shalt not commit adultery on one's diet. Thou shalt not steal time away from the diet to focus on anything else in life. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy diet by admitting it is unsustainable. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife's ability to enjoy food. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's good nature due to them not being on a restrictive diet. If you are not sold on those 10 steps, you are a heathen who will burn in hell. But if you are not a bad person and want to better yourself, listen to what our customers have to say.
Hi, I'm Mary, and I lost 20 pounds on the Pray Away the Garish Overeating program by simply saying this prayer every time I was hungry. Hail Mary, full of bread, the problem is me. Big are thou among women, and blessed be your stomach with fruit and nothing else.
Hi, I'm Frank, and I lost 45 pounds by reciting this prayer. Our Frank, who art heavyset, hallowed should be thy stomach. Thy fitness come, thighs will be toned on leg day as it is in the gym.
Connor, listen, I'm a little detective. I managed to get behind the paywall without paying any money.
What?
And find a workbook. Now, how did I do it, you ask? I just Googled the Way Down workbook and some beautiful faith-based person uploaded a PDF that I was able to download.
Oh, wow.
So basically, right, this is called the Way Down workbook is called The Exodus Out of Egypt. Another just quick little side. I want you to note how many times she uses slavery as a metaphor for your diet.
I feel like you've already said the word slavery and it kind
of... I have said the word slavery, Connor. I have a real issue with how many times she uses the kind of metaphor of slavery with dieting that I'm like, slavery is a real problem. I don't think you should be using it in this way. So basically the workbook is essentially a food diary. We all know what a food diary is.
In there.
Not a good time. Okay. It has all the standards of every weight loss program, you know, a goal of the week, et cetera, et cetera. Except
G-O-W.
G-O-W. So week one of Exodus, this is kind of how they, you know, bring you in. First and foremost, understand that you are not a failure. Over the years, you have developed a passion for and a focus on food, which has left you overweight and miserable under its control. Attempts to solve the problem by dieting has increased this focus. Through Way Down, you will learn to transfer both the passion for food and your cry for deliverance from it to the only one who truly deserves all of this attention, God. The slavery to food and dieting is much like the bondage of the children of Israel suffered at the hands of the Egyptian pharaohs in the Old Testament.
Wow, you almost had me there for a second until we started talking about Israel. And now I'm like, wait, hang on a second. The children of Israel, what do they have to do with my addiction to Twinkies?
I have a partiality to one too many bickies in my tea. How have I suddenly been brought into the pharaohs, the Egyptian pharaohs of the Old Testament?
Wow, that's a bit of a walk, isn't it? Like,
Okay. So basically, you know, she says, like, in the Bible, God hears their cries and delivers them from Egypt, you know, and tests their devotion in the desert and finally brings them peace and joy in the promised land. But the choice is up to us for us to leave Egypt and go through the desert or devotion to find that peace.
Wait a minute.
Joy.
Am I the desert or am I Egypt?
Okay. Wait. Which place has the most food? That's what I want to know.
Wait, and where does the burning bush come into it? Hang on a second. I'm confused. Okay.
Milk and honey. Is there any milk and honey?
Okay.
So
we got to get... Wait, hang on. So we got to get out of Egypt?
Got to get out of Egypt. We got to get tested in the desert in order to be joyful and free.
Right. Okay. The desert is the new world. It's the hero's journey.
Yes.
Get in there. Face some obstacles. Slay some dragons.
So basically, Egypt is your before photo.
Okay.
The desert is the diet. And then apparently your freedom, God will deliver you to an after photo. That's how I'm
reading
this.
What land are we in here? Because if you go Egypt, then desert, and then it's just nowhere. Like, do I go back to Egypt? Like,
Connor, I don't have a map.
Yeah, I need one.
I don't have a map right now for you, okay? I'm sure they provide a map, like say in Lord of the Rings in the book, they provide a map in the workbook, but unfortunately I didn't get
it. I love it though, because it's almost like she's starting out with this really strong metaphor and then just kind of trailing off. So, right, so Egypt, okay. Oh, it's a dark, it's a scary place. You want to get out of there into the desert and it's, oh, you're going to be face some challenge. And then
just chill.
Don't worry about it.
Then just be thin and chill. Yeah. That's what it's all about. Okay, so now let's get into the nitty gritty of it.
Okay. Right? Wait a minute, it gets nittier and grittier?
You had a problem making fun of this in the beginning and now you're like, wait a minute, this is bonkers. And I'm like, yes, I know. Okay, how to feed your stomach. So this is basically what they tell you, how you're going to, you know, get into the program. Step one, wait anywhere from 1 to 36 hours on your first hunger.
I'm to wait from either 1 to 36 hours?
Yeah.
While I'm hungry?
Yeah.
That's a bit of a gap, isn't it?
Connor, what, you sleep 8 hours?
Oh, okay, so I can sleep through it. I thought it was just to wait in the one place and go, how hungry am I? Getting pretty hungry. It's only been 5 minutes.
Get a plane to a desert. Sit in the desert on a stool. Wait 1 to 36 hours.
Wow. Okay.
1 to 36 hours. So that's, first of all, straight away, right? On your first hunger. So this is when you start the diet.
Okay.
And then it will come eat approximately 1 to 3 times a day.
Okay, so
after your first hunger.
So when you do this 1 to 36 hours, yeah, let's say it's an hour, 2 hours, whatever.
59 minutes isn't good enough.
Okay, then you know you're getting, your hunger
is approximately going to come anywhere between 1 to 3 times a day.
Okay.
So they describe as your hunger is when you're going to eat, right?
Okay.
So obviously straight away.
Chow down.
Straight away. Not the greatest plan I've ever heard of. Step two. This is just, hunger is a very natural, burning, empty, hollow sensation just below the rib cage. Okay. There is a buildup of stomach acid which will produce a growl. If you have to bypass hunger due to work or social conflicts, the sensation will come back in around 45 minutes.
Okay.
While it is normal to skip or miss hunger every once in a while, do not make it a habit.
Okay.
If you haven't felt hunger within 36 hours, eat a small meal and wait for the hunger again. So this 36 hours thing comes again. So if you haven't felt hunger within 36 hours, eat a small meal and wait for the hunger again. You should feel it soon. After your first attempt, don't keep waiting 36 hours. Continue to decrease your food daily until you feel stomach hunger. We work on reducing food intakes to normal amounts for your body, right? Number three, family meal time. If you are hungry before dinner, just bypass hunger. If you are full at normal meal times because of an irregular eating schedule or because you've tasted all your cooking several times, then just drink a glass of unsweet tea or a diet drink and talk with the family.
That sounds like hell. No, okay. So she's saying if you're not hungry, don't eat, like.
But what she's saying is, right, if you are full at the mealtime because of an irregular eating schedule,
yeah,
which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Or from tasting your cooking.
You've been sampling that sauce. Let me just one more. Full now.
Oh, I couldn't eat another morsel of that tomato sauce.
I pulled out one strand of spaghetti, cut off the edge, make sure it was cooked. Full now.
Oh, couldn't eat again. But this is very non-specific. That's what I mean. It's, although, like, it's very much left, like, basically it's essentially saying wait until you are absolutely starving and make sure you're starving.
It sounds like it's encouraging, like, starve yourself. It's kind of like saying, like, hey, if you can wait 36 hours, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, yeah, it's basically saying to kind of starve yourself for 36 hours and then decrease that time.
Yeah. So the next day, do 35 hours. Wait a minute, but what hours in a day?
24 hours in a day. Am I meant to wait? That's another day and a half. Number four, drink non-alcoholic beverages or diet drinks to help sugar levels drop normally so that you can get the hunger signal. Continual intake of sugar through drinks like soda drinks, Gatorade, and juice prevent you from sensing hunger.
The Gatorade, did she say?
Yeah.
That's madness. Like most diets would say, like.
But what she's saying is, basically, yeah, that's the thing. It's not about any specific food. What she's saying is, oh,
okay.
But like diet drink, like this is like teenage girls. Teenage girls would drink tons of Diet Coke just so that they won't eat.
Yeah.
That essentially what she's saying is, if you are hungry, if you drink this, you won't feel your hunger.
Wow.
That's even ignoring your own hunger.
Yeah.
Going against what it she's saying to do.
It's like saying, hey, let's do intuitive eating, except let's only focus on the part where you're not hungry.
Yeah.
So if you're hungry, oh, let's kind of skate over that as best we can because that's a problem.
But even then, that's it. Yeah. If you're hungry, if you can try pretend you're not hungry.
Yeah. Great. If you're full, if you're full, you're doing great.
Yeah. But if you're actually full of food, you're not doing great. But this is what she says. If you are sipping on these drinks all day, it is like an IV bag in a hospital that continually keeps your blood sugar elevated, preventing your body from ever knowing when you are truly hungry.
Just want to get one over on your body. It's like, that bastard will never know I'm hungry.
If you do not like diet drinks, try them for 3 straight weeks.
Oh my God, come on.
It only takes your taste buds this long to switch over. Yeah. This is another one. Use a fork when you're eating. Put it down between bites and sip your drink. A lot of people would give that advice. Again, it is a tool to help you slow down in order to find fullness. Anything you can do to slow you down and not be greedy. This greedy.
You must be stopped at all costs. Anything you can do to slow yourself down.
You're a maniac and you need to be stopped.
You greedy son of a so-and-so.
Number six, be attentive. Went to your body when it starts to get satisfied and stop eating when you are politely full, which is a satisfied feeling. Politely full.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
What does politely full mean?
And I'm kind of wondering here, what are we on? Commandment number 7, and where is Jesus? At what point do we start? At what point do we start eating Bible pages here?
So funny, Connor. I hadn't even brought
you
that
forgot.
In. I just forgot. You
forgot
that this, I forgot that we were meant to see the children of Israel. I didn't know what we were meant to be doing at the moment. Are we in the New Testament, Old Testament? I haven't a clue.
Exodus, I think.
We're in Exodus. Well, I know. Apparently, we are, but I haven't heard anything about it in the steps. Number 7, rate your foods. Decide which foods you like best and eat those first, saving the least favorite until the end.
Okay, I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, some people will say, you know, when you're eating mindfully, right? So you've got a big plate of food that you would normally scoff it all down, will go and then be super full, right? So if you're eating mindfully, you want to eat your food slowly, meaning you will get full faster, right?
Yeah.
Which means, though, that you'll end up leaving food on your plate. It's just something that's going to happen if you get full halfway through the meal. So what people do is they'll eat the thing that they like the most first. That's a legit thing. Like, you know, it just means that you might end up like with your broccoli or whatever, if you're not a fan of that. Like, you've only eaten your like pork rinds first or whatever.
Pork
rinds and broccoli. That's the two food groups in my house. I don't know about you.
You're a vegan.
No. The those like ranchero ones that you get in the shops. They're fine.
Pork rinds. I literally was like, could you not think of any other food? Pork rinds and broccoli.
Are you thinking of pork scratchings?
Ah, right. Okay. Number 8, wrap up your leftovers. You can have them the next time you're hungry. Not bad. That's do you know when you're just like, that's just good advice for like, say, a lunch the next day.
That's just good housekeeping right there. Doesn't even need to be in your book.
Next thing you know, she's like selling God's Tupperware. And you're like, oh, you can use God's Tupperware to put the...
It's like, make sure to wipe down your counter after preparing your meal, put away all utensils, and have a great night's sleep.
Do you remember to descale that kettle? It does get the limescale in there. Imagine that was like
here's
number 9. You're like, oh. Okay.
Here's a tip for the winter months. Chains on your tires. Okay? Trust me, you'll thank me later. Anyway, back to the diet.
Yeah, get a fan in that toilet. It's really going to get out the must. You know, you don't want any mold in there. Okay, number 9, use carryouts when eating. You know, restaurants have big portions. Once again, that's pretty good advice. Number 10, do not serve yourself a 5-course meal just because a medication must be taken with food. Food needed with medication can be small amounts, like 1 to 3 crackers, unless your physician gives different orders. Generally, you do not need a banquet.
That is such a specific thing.
How many times was she like, I am so sick of seeing people on medication. I would having a 5-course meal. I'm sick of this.
Did it have to be 5 large pizzas? I mean, come on.
Okay. Food recall. This is the part of it that I really, really had a problem with, okay? I'm just going to show you, this is an example food diary that they included in the workbook of kind of like what it should look like. Okay. And you will love this, Connor.
It's like breakfast, Leviticus. I had Psalms for lunch and I had...
Lunch Leviticus would totally have been good as well. Okay, right. So here is an example of the food recall, which is basically food diary. Pre-breakfast snacks or drinks. Cup of coffee with a little cream. Okay. Breakfast, nothing. Mid-morning snacks, nothing. Lunch, half a BLT sandwich, 2 to 3 onion rings, Diet Coke. Afternoon snack, Hershey's Kisses.
Wait, what happened to the other half of the sandwich? Where does that go?
Well, I imagine you put it into God's Tupperware box, okay, and leave for tomorrow.
Right, okay. I forgot commandment number 7.
Yeah. Afternoon snack, 2 Hershey Kisses. Dinner, several bites of barbecue chicken, baked beans, and potato chips. Several bites.
Several bites. Wait. Several bites of barbecue chicken.
Baked beans and potato chips.
How do you bite a bean? Okay.
Evening snack, 2 to 3 bites of chocolate cake, Diet Coke. Midnight snack, nothing. Yay, praise God, I filled up on God and Jesus Christ.
Wait, what, does it say that? No, it doesn't, does it?
Yeah, it does.
Oh my God, they got jokes too. They got humor. Oh, they're making it fun.
That is a very small amount of food. And what's very funny to me is that is like the example food diary.
Yeah.
It's not exactly like a particularly healthy...
No. And I think strategy there is to show people, hey, you can still eat your favorite BLT sandwich, just not a whole BLT sandwich.
Half one.
You can still have onion rings, but two onion rings will just make you hungry for more onion rings.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's designed to be eaten as like 40 and then a cry.
That's all onion rings are good for. Know that.
The guy who created it was like, you can't have less than 40. Yeah. Like, look, you need to have a cry after.
I'd rather have like a plate of roast potatoes than 2 fucking onion rings that are going to like probably equal the same amount of calories, but the potatoes are going to fill me up a bit more rather than make me want to eat more. So, yeah, but I think it is to make people think like, oh, you can still have a bit of cake. Still have a little Hershey Kiss here and there.
But the 2 to 3 bites, like what? This isn't even portion control. Yeah. You're talking about a portion of something, a normal portion.
I've got a big mouth. I can take some big bites. I could bite a slice off a cake.
You know what's so funny? I would definitely, if I was part of this, being like, oh yeah, like 2 to 3 bites of chocolate cake, to me is like half the chocolate cake. I managed to get through.
I picked up the full cake like a sandwich and took a bite out of it. Is that what we were talking about?
You know the bit in like Matilda where the kids eat the cake? I'd be like, get a massive, massive like a ladle and just take it out. Yeah, that is what they're describing as like the portions.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
They also have a bit here.
That is a very small amount of food. Whatever about how healthy it is. That's like, you could fit all of that food on one plate. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
And, it's a whole day. I know we're joking, but this is the other thing. Once again, total respect to religion.
Love it.
5 stars.
Yeah.
But like, this is essentially pushing under eating.
Oh, big time.
It is not pushing anything else other than dismiss your body cues, even though it's saying listen to your body cues, but then also giving the information of, yeah, but then maybe just have a Diet Coke instead of actually listening to your body cues. It is really, really unhealthy. It's not a good thing to do. That's why I had no problem ripping into this, because I was like, it has put faith on a package of under eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's totally wrong to do that. The food recall, so this also, there was this bit called the temptation in the workbook. So more than likely you will get tempted with the food when you come home from work and are home alone. There you are in the house. There's no one around. So the battle begins.
This sounds immediately sexy. Okay.
So the battle begins.
What happens next?
Take out your sword. You will feel the temptation come over you.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that a promise? Okay.
An overwhelming heavy feeling of greed for that food. You want to go and eat everything in the refrigerator and in the pantry, but you know you are not hungry.
She knows me so well.
Number one, first, immediately flee the area where you are being tempted.
Just dive out the window. Ah!
run through the door, not open the door, run through it. Like a cartoon shape of your outline should be there. Get out of that kitchen. Go to your bedroom or someplace where you can be alone to gather your thoughts in order to pass this test. You have to concentrate from the beginning and think all the way through of what you're going to do. Second, do not eat until your stomach growls. The faster you decide to obey, the faster the temptation goes away. Third, get on your knees and pray to God that he provides an escape and delivers you from this temptation.
Well, where was God when you walked through the front door? Do you know what I mean? Like, why is this temptation being flaunted face?
Yeah. It's the test. It's the test to get you, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Okay, so this is amazing. I love this. And I love your performance, Grace. Kudos. But I just want to say, like, this is the problem when it comes to people trying to help people who have addictive behaviors, right?
Yeah.
This goes for smokers and drinkers as well. So by putting the thing that you are addicted to in this place of it has immense power over me and I am a quote unquote slave to it.
Yeah.
That gives the addiction the power.
Oh, yeah.
That gives the piece of cake in the fridge or the cigarette or the beer in the pub the thing that says, I'm stronger than you. You can't resist me. So you better get the fuck out of here and get on your knees and pray.
Yeah.
As opposed to standing in the same space as me and facing that cake, that cigarette, beer, whatever, and going, you're just a thing that I like to insert into my body every now and again. And, you know, and try, and, you know, it's not as easy as that, but that's, I personally think that's the place that gets you into a more powerful situation. Easier said than done.
Oh, yeah.
But this thing of, oh, I can't be alone in my own house, in my own kitchen. Like, what the fuck? Am I supposed to flee, go out onto the street and just sit out in the rain and go, gotta wait for this hunger to pass? That, like, that, it, but you hear that. Yeah. You hear that across the board when people are trying to help people to do with alcohol, cigarettes, drugs. It's giving the substance the power and taking it away from the person who is the user of the item.
Yeah. And I think the thing that really gets me here, listen, I grew up Catholic. Like I know guilt.
So you've done battle a few times. I've
done battle. In this, she actually says guilt is a good thing. Guilt can be used for, you know, as a way of motivating. I personally disagree. Mm. I've having grown up in the most guilt-ridden country, in one of the most guilt-ridden religions.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I say that jokingly, like the whole idea of like temptation and pleasure, they're used as pleasure being used as like a bad word.
Yeah.
It's like what really gets me is that even the fact that if you lean into it and go, you know, maybe you just want a bit of chocolate cake. And actually, if you didn't feel so awful about it afterwards, because apparently being fat is somehow God doesn't love you.
Against God.
Against God. And I'm like, well, you, no one knows that. You know what I mean? Yeah. No one knows. And I also just think it's so sad to think that someone would be like, oh, I can't, because then God will hate me or I won't get into heaven. Mm. That's a horrible thing to think. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that that's what the whole thing that like you'd have to flee and that you can't be trusted and there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Like you feel like hugging these people and going, there's actually nothing wrong with you.
And what about some sort of flip side exercise with that where it's like, okay, you've got this lonely temptation moment and you take out that piece of cake or whatever it is and you open up a dialogue between yourself and God as you try this thing and do it in a very mindful, conscious way. That's got to be healthier than I can't be trusted in my own bloody house and I must get on my knees and pray and just like try to distract myself and run away from this thing. It's really frustrating
because it's funny, like I think I sometimes, you know, when you have like a fantastic meal, when you're literally like, that was amazing. Like, I'm so grateful. I'm literally like, God, I got to enjoy that food. Like, how amazing was that?
Yeah.
You are more grateful.
Totally.
When you get to, because most of the time, you're just eating like what, you know, like you're just getting through your day and food's a part of it. That's great. But like most of the time we're not making bloody Jamie Oliver like pasta dishes. We're just trying to like, you know, make something that's 5 minutes
just
done.
Stealing a few bites of a barbecue chicken and beans.
We're all having that half a BLT. Do you know what I mean? Run out the door. But like, so when you have an amazing experience with food and it's pleasurable, you're actually so grateful because
totally,
and you remember it and it's a part of life and it's such a privileged part of life, because you know it's such a privilege to enjoy some really good food.
To be able to have an able body that allows you to taste and digest all this food. You know what I mean? To whereas you could be unwell in a hospital and not able to eat.
But
you know
look at even COVID. Some people lost their sense of taste. And genuinely that terrified me. I was like, to lose, because I really enjoy food. And so the dieting world has so messed up my relationship with food that like it's only lately I'm reestablishing how much I enjoy food and it can be a great part of your life. So I think that all this stuff about temptation and pleasure being dirty words, and it's like after a while, like what good's just enjoy food. I'm pretty sure I think it's a waste, and like I can't speak for God. I am not God, but I think it is a waste to not be able to enjoy the food that has been provided on this earth anyway myself.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fad Camp. As always, we want to thank our producer, Darren Lee. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to review us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Great ratings and reviews really help more people find the show, and it would mean a lot to us.
Make sure to share the episodes with friends and family or on your social media. Every listen helps.
And we absolutely love hearing from our listeners, so please get in touch with any of your diet stories on fadcamppodcast@gmail.com.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Head Stuff Plus.